Blog Talk Radio.
Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, February the 24th, as we like to do on Sundays. We'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots to get into. The media had another interesting week with the story of that young man in Chicago. I don't know how many more of these hits they can take. I mean, it seems like here we are, day number 54 or 53 of 2019, and we've already had three of these major stories in 2019. It's rather remarkable. We're going to talk about President Trump. He's in Vietnam to talk to North Korea and the hosting, or interviewing, his lawyer, Michael Cohen. And I'm wondering if maybe they shouldn't maybe postpone that while the president is engaging in tough negotiations over there. We'll talk to Bill about that. Senator Sanders is in the race, and we're getting a lot of his old videos. And his videos are very entertaining, to say the least, because I think we're really seeing the Bernie Sanders, who he really is. And he's basically a 1960s communist. That's what he is. The Democrats keep moving further and further to the left. I have a few thoughts about Kamala Harris, as well as this young woman in the Bronx, who I guess continues to be the star of the Democrat Party, but I'm not sure she's leading them in the right direction. We'll talk to Bill about that. Venezuela is exploding. I mean, it's I don't know how much longer Maduro can make it. So a lot to get into today, as well as a look at some of the PC stories out of the universities. Well, Bill, that's a pretty long introduction, but there's a lot to talk about. How are you tonight?
Well, fine. We're okay here in New York. We are writing odes of tribute to Little Evita from the Bronx, who has declared herself to be the boss today. I am the boss. You know, today the Bronx, tomorrow the world.
That's it. Now, isn't the word boss, isn't that racist or sexist?
I would certainly say that the word boss, yes, has implications of white privilege, implications
yes.
of city dominance over rural peoples. I think yes, and I just thought it was hilarious that she used the term. Though I don't know what goes on in her head, because she's not. We've talked about this. She's not dumb. I mean, she had some honors in her past, but she just does not seem to be attuned to people. And
mm-hmm.
I'm not even so sure she's attuned to the people in her district. They may say, "What is she talking about? She's supposed to
right.
be representing us," you know. But she's now become this national figure.
Sure. No, I was going to say, I think you're exactly right. I think you're seeing a disconnect between her and the district, because, I mean, this is basically a working class district, from what I understand. And I don't think they really want a representative to be talking about, to be sort of the voice of the Democrat Party. They'd like someone to represent them in their district, I would think. And, you know, she's not off to a good start, because a lot of jobs are not going to go to her district, Bill.
Well, that's yes. she probably considered those jobs of the oppressor, you know.
I guess so. Yeah, $100,000 years.
Yeah, I mean, she's going to say, "I will take care of you. I'm your boss. I'm here." You can write a very good musical comedy about this, but at the same time, I mean, there's no question that she has taken hold. And, of course, the reason was, in fact, I wrote a short essay last night about for some friends about this very subject. And that
mm-hmm.
just reminds me of the rise of Gloria Steinem in the
1960s. Yes.
I mean, Gloria Steinem was the beautiful feminist, and this one is the beautiful congresswoman. Anyone who knows anything about journalism knows that that's true. If she were not as attractive as she is, and she's a very attractive young woman, nobody
mm-hmm.
would care. And she'd just be another young congresswoman But she has that style. There's no question about it. She has a certain magnetism, and that's what's doing it. But political correctness is such nowadays that people cannot, in journalism, discuss that fact publicly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also think she's benefiting a great deal from two other things. She's a Latina who doesn't like Trump. And
yes.
That's almost like a perfect storm for many in the media. If she was a Latina who supported Trump, just as attractive, same person, but she supported Trump, we wouldn't even know who she is. I mean, they would have reported on her victory, and it would have been over then. So I think she seems to be in the right place at the right time. But I also feel a little bit, and I want to bring in Kamala Harris at the same time, that I think both of these ladies have the potential for self-destruction because they seem to talk too much. And I think Kamala Harris even more because she's running for president. And you've seen her this week or just in her brief campaign for president. She really stepped on it when she was talking about private insurance. I mean, look, a lot of Americans have private insurance and they're pretty happy with it. So why would you say eliminate private insurance? Then you have the comments that she made about marijuana, which her own father didn't care for that. And now with this incident in Chicago where, you know, her answer, after the fact, her answer was just absolutely ridiculous, you know. So sometimes these people maybe think they're too smart, but I think they could self-destruct, Bill.
That's absolutely true, and I think they are, as you said, in the process of doing it, because what they are doing right now is they are so frightened of the left-wing base of the Democratic Party that that's who they're trying to appeal to. I mean, it's the things that these people say have no general appeal, but they have appeal to a certain element of the party, and that element of the party is not only growing in power, they are exceptionally mean-spirited. I mean, these are the people who are always, they're the humanitarians, I'm such a wonderful person, we want a revolution so the shirtless ones, almost like Argentina, the shirtless ones can rise, and these are the same people who send their kids to private school. Believe me,
right.
I know them, I've seen this script a million times. And they are, and some of these billionaires like Steyer, who are pushing them further and further to the left on environmental questions, and those are the people they're appealing to because they know they have to win a nomination before they win an election. And
right.
The problem is that what happens in political races in presidential years is that the candidate will take the base position of the party during the nominating campaign, and then try to switch closer to the middle. I don't know if that's going to work in this case. These people are so far out on a limb. How are they going to go back to the middle? What are they going to say?
That's right. What are they going to say? You know, I didn't mean what I said before.
That's right.
But I thought it was very interesting. Former Senator Joe Lieberman was on television this morning on one of the morning shows, and it was his birthday, so they were celebrating his birthday. And they asked him about this young woman, Alejandra Ocasio-Cortez. They asked her about this young woman, and he said, well, you know, I hope she's not the future of the party. I mean, Lieberman was very honest about this. He said, if we follow that direction, our candidate is going to lose in 2020. And so I think if Lieberman is saying that, I'm sure that there's other people saying it, Bill. And Kamala Harris is basically saying the same thing that this young woman is saying in New York. I mean, Kamala Harris, I guess her latest remark is she doesn't care how much green energy costs.
Yes.
Well, that's great.
That's right.
That is really – that's a really smart thing to say in a debate with Vice President Pence. I don't care how much it costs. We got to do it because this is like World War II. Nobody said how much is World War II going to cost.
Right.
You know, something that.
Well, that's the one you were fighting for your lives. And here, what they don't understand is when they want to start taxing people at much higher rates, they're going to lose a good part of their tax base, which is what's happening in New York, by the way. I mean, even the governor of New York, who is no righty, said we can't afford to lose these people because they're the ones who pay the taxes. You know, New York City State right now is dependent completely on Wall Street for its tax base. If Wall Street were to collapse, the state would collapse, and it is already losing more people than any other state in the union. And they don't understand that there are impacts of their policies that they don't quite comprehend, and that is that a lot of the jobs that were created would disappear. because right. companies would no longer be able, they want to raise the corporate tax, which is crazy. Companies would not be able to pay these people, and a lot of people would get fired, and in turn, other people who depend on them, local stores, local merchants, food stores, will suffer, and they could plunge the country into an enormous recession. I mean, the one that would be larger than the last one we had in 2008. And they don't seem to understand that most people in America today do understand that danger, and they're not
yes.
addressing it. So you're quite right. I mean, going up against a presidential candidate, and Trump is going to be murderous, is going
right.
to be very difficult for them.
That's right. And one thing that is interesting, too, and they were making this point about California, that here they are, these states are losing – are losing revenues, and they're losing revenue at a time the economy's growing. So if we have, you know, the least of a recession, hopefully not before 2020, but let's say there's another recession anytime in the future, that means that those revenues are going to drop even more. I mean, right now in New York and California and these states are doing well because of the economy, or I should say they're doing better than they will if there is a recession, but the situation in New York is pretty scary when Cuomo himself said, no, we cannot lose these people. And as we talked about last week, there seems to be a real internal, you know, almost like a civil war inside the Democrat Party over this Amazon story, because I think there's a lot of smart Democrats who are looking at this saying, what in the heck are we doing, folks, driving out 25,000 jobs? I thought it was interesting, Bill, speaking of these jobs, that the senator from Florida, the new senator, Senator Scott, basically said, hey, come down to Florida. We'd be happy to have you. I thought that was
yes.
cute.
Yes. Well, and that's exactly what's going to happen. These companies, it isn't just Amazon. Other companies now are going to be very much discouraged from moving to New York because they don't want to go through this. They called everything under the sun, and they get dragged into New York politics. Why would they want to do that? The only reason they would want to do it is if the CEO's wife wants to go to the theater, which is often, by the way, the basis of these decisions. You know, I mean, some executive wants to live in New York. That's why so many executives live in Westchester County, where we live, and their companies are somewhere else. This
mm-hmm.
goes on all the time. There are CEOs living in Westchester County, and their corporate headquarters are in Iowa or someplace. It's because their wives want to go to the theater. And there was actually a study made many years ago on a placement of corporate headquarters, and they have these big studies made when a company says
mm-hmm.
we need a new headquarters, and they hire some outside consultant at $80 zillion to do a study as to where the best corporate headquarters are. And they said, isn't it interesting that the answer in 85% of the cases was within 15 miles of the CEO's home? You know, in other words, make it easy for the boss.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was interesting. I remember a personal story back in, I guess it was in the 80s. I was working for a bank, and the bank brought down an executive. They recruited an executive and brought him down. This was in Baltimore. And they brought him down, and this fellow had an amazing career opportunity. And eventually he went back to New York like 3 months later. So I remember, you know, talking to somebody else, and I said, well, why wasn't he happy here? I mean, what was the problem? It was a great opportunity for him. And he said, yeah, but his wife didn't like it. He couldn't get his wife out of New York for exactly that reason, going to Broadway and all the other things that are part of the social life there. So, yes, it matters a lot. But I'm not sure that's gonna be enough to keep – maybe they can keep the CEO in New York, but – the company is not going to be in New York, though.
That's right. That's well, and this is going to hurt the city down the line, and there'll be a mayoral election, but the Democrats will be elected anyway in New York because the Republicans won't even run a candidate. I mean, we don't get me started on the subject of the Republican Party in New York. We've had in the last 20 years a Republican mayor in Giuliani, one of the great mayors in the history of New York. We've had a Republican governor. George Pataki, and they've given up. I mean, it's as if the Republican Party isn't even there. We're not going to be able to solve the problems in these states, in these very, very blue states, unless the Republican Party is revitalized and starts to fight. And for them, that's an unusual experience.
Well, they have to start, I mean, if people are moving out, that doesn't help either.
No.
Because a lot of the Republicans are moving out. There was a recent study that said, or a poll, that 53% of the people in California would move out, you know, or wanted
right.
to. And I said to myself, you know, that's a higher percentage than Mexico because,
yeah.
you know, a lot of people want to leave Mexico, but it's not 53%. So I just said to myself, how in the world can you run a state if 53% of your people want to leave? And my gut feeling is that that 53% are people who are working, pay taxes, pay property
yeah.
taxes, and are just fed up with living there.
Yeah,
I mean, those people are going
to
be they're the contributors. They're the ones who are going to go somewhere else, Texas, whatever,
yeah.
and contribute here. They're not taking anything. They're giving, they're paying a lot more than what they're getting in benefits, Bill.
Oh, yes. The people who want to leave are the people in Central and Eastern California. The ones
mm-hmm.
along the coast are the ones who don't have to leave. And, you know, the Silicon Valley types and the university types. But I think what the people of California should do is I think they should form an immigrant caravan and
yes.
go south and try to get into Mexico and ask for compensation if they can't. And they'll be just
right.
fine, you know?
That's right. Well, that might just work. You know, that
yes.
might just work going. One more thing before we take a break. I wanted to go back to the topic of this young lady up in the Bronx because there have been some articles here in the last couple of days about her, and they're trying to figure out where she lives, what her address is, and you know, exactly if she put her boyfriend, I guess, gave her boyfriend an email, I guess, a congressional email. I mean, there may be some ethical issues. I mean, I don't want to start up something, but I'm just simply saying there may be some ethical issues with this young lady because she came up so fast, and maybe they didn't cross all the T's and dot all the I's, Bill.
Well, that's quite possible. I think we've discussed on the broadcast the fact that she dresses awfully well, and she does live awfully well, I mean, apparently in Washington. She is absolutely impeccable in her appearance and her style. And where is this money coming from? And this was before she got her congressional salary, when she complained that she couldn't afford the rent in Washington because she had been a barmaid, and that was really where she was in terms of income. But you have to ask, where is all this stuff coming from, and whether it is coming from people and suppliers or supporters who have business before the government. Now, if she is borrowing, for example, all these wonderful outfits she wears, and she has great taste, she really does, she looks wonderful, that is a service, it's a gift, and you have to report that on federal forms. So far, apparently, she hasn't, although, you know, maybe we don't know because the reporters aren't asking any questions, as usual. You know, if you're on the left, you don't get too many tough questions. But I think there are a lot of questions about her. I think there are questions about who she's really associated with, who is feeding of the lines. I mean, we know, for example, that the congresswoman from Minnesota, who had to apologize a couple of times, appeared at a Senate hearing and was reading the questions, obviously written by somebody else. I want to know more about these people. I want to know more about Alexandria. I want to know more about her history. She is apparently quite bright, a very good academic student, but I just feel that there are associations here that we have a right to know about, and we don't know about them.
Right, and I think if she was a conservative Republican, I think the media would be asking those questions.
Oh, they'd be all over her.
They'd be all over her, but, you know, eventually they may have to. They may have to, because if these ethical, I mean, if something were to, some news were to explode, like her address. I read a story that, you know, nobody, she doesn't even have a district office, which is a little strange.
Yeah.
Has not opened a district office, which is, I mean, that's part of your budget, so you don't even have to pay for that out of your own pocket. You kind of get the feeling that it's all about her. It's all about Alexandria. And that, and maybe it's too much. Eventually she'll self-explode. That's my point, Bill.
Well, I happen to agree with you. She's not ready for this. Look, I don't think she herself expected that she would be the phenomenon that she is.
Maybe mm-hmm. she planned it or dreamed of it. But the reality is, and we've talked about this, this reminds me of the rise of Gloria Steinem in the 1960s, who was, I don't take anything away from her intelligence or her wit, but the fact of the matter is she broke through because of that Gloria Steinem look. If you mm-hmm. have a certain look in politics or in publishing or in anything else, it is a tremendous advantage. I know that's not politically correct to say, but it's truthful. I mean, one of the reasons that the press loves her is not only her left-wing stances, but the fact that she does photograph so well, and she is, you know, such a pleasure to look at.
Right.
If she were just plain Jane, nobody would care. I know that's a terrible thing to say about society, but it's a truthful statement, and everybody in journalism knows it.
Oh, I think you're exactly right. But, you know, still, at some point, You know, if you keep dressing like that and living like that, you know, people maybe will start asking some questions. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with our friend Bill Katz right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. You know, we always feature the music of my friend Carlos Guedes. He's from Venezuela. He and his wife are from Venezuela. So I know it's a very tough situation down there, and I'm sure Carlos and Luisa are very concerned about what's happening in their country. We certainly pray for the best. Let me bring Bill back in. Tough situation down in Venezuela, Bill. I still don't see how Maduro can survive. I'm just hoping that there's no bloodshed. That's my biggest fear, is that in a moment of panic that, you know, some soldiers will shoot and kill some people. I'm hoping that doesn't happen, but I don't see how Maduro can survive too much longer, Bill.
I agree with you, but, you know, it's been pointed out, as pointed out by Chris Wallace this morning, that the Venezuelan military appears to still be loyal to him. Now, whether that is an actual feeling of loyalty or whether it is the fear on the part of individual soldiers that if they join a revolt that they themselves will be killed by the loyalists in the army. Nobody knows what's going on in their minds. But Venezuela as a nation has really completely collapsed. And
right.
People are being denied care that is being provided internationally because Maduro will not let the care into the country. Which is what those demonstrations were about yesterday. And it has to be just a matter of time. And also you wonder about Maduro's personal safety in a situation like that.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm all that concerned. But, you know, sooner or later, you've got to believe that somebody's going to take a shot at him.
Right. And I was saying to a friend of mine from Venezuela that he's got to make Maduro himself has to make that choice because if he's not going to be president of Venezuela in 30 days, where is he going to be? He could be dead, like you say, assassination, or he could be in prison in Venezuela, arrested, or he could be like Noriega in Miami,
yes,
waiting for a drug traffic trial. I mean, look, this guy can be put on trial as easily as Noriega was 20 years or so ago, and he could spend the rest of his life next to El Chapo up there in Colorado. So that's the other,
yeah,
you know, he's looking at his future, and these are the options. It may make more sense to say, you know what, I'm going to go to Cuba or I'm going to go to Mexico. At least there, you know, he's not going to be in a jail, Bill.
Or he could go to Chicago and claim that while he was out one night, he was mugged by two gringos and get all the sympathy of the press.
Right, that's right. That's not a bad idea because then he'll be on MSNBC
that's
explaining
right.
how he was the victim of a couple of guys wearing Trump hats. You know, that makes a lot of sense. Bill, before we get to the topic of President Trump, I wanted to just bring up a couple of quick things. You wrote this week extensively about the passing of this gentleman, Stanley Donem. I did not know much about him, but you obviously feel he was quite a contributor to to the movie industry or to the industry in general. So maybe if you could tell us a little bit about him.
Well, Stanley Donen was one of the leading figures in the Golden Age of Hollywood, especially in the later years of the Golden Age of Hollywood. He was a guiding force behind musicals like Singin' in the Rain, which is now considered the consummate, quintessential American musical film. He worked very closely with people like Gene Kelly. He worked closely with Audrey Hepburn. He really did represent the style and the glamour and the music of that age. He began as a dancer. He met Gene Kelly. I think they danced in the same Broadway production together. They had a great deal of work that they did together. And Donen is the one who basically outlived the others. He has not really been working in that area for quite some time, but he died at 94. I thought it was important, and the obituary was in every major newspaper, to point out that there are still a few people left from the age when you went into a movie theater and you got 2 hours of glorious entertainment and beautiful music without four-letter words and without a political lesson. And he really did he really did represent that time.
And it's interesting that you mentioned that because there is a big show tonight, the Oscars.
Yes.
And I was reading that the advertisers are actually asking for guarantees before putting down any money, which
yes.
is remarkable. That had never happened before, but maybe they've learned their lesson, Bill, after all these Sunday nights of anti-Trump or anti-Republican speeches.
Well, I think that some have learned their lesson, but you can. I'm not going to watch the show. I just find it obnoxious.
Yeah.
I don't even
yes,
think
I
they
know.
Have a host. I don't think they have a host.
No, they don't.
I don't think they couldn't get one or
right.
they were afraid of some people. I mean, it's never gone on without a host. Does anyone would really care who wins the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress in a feature film? We haven't even seen most of those films. The movie industry today is not really an American industry. It's more of an international industry. You very rarely hear anybody even talking about feature films. And they will go on the air. Yes, advertisers have been asking for a guarantee, which simply means that the ratings will determine to some degree what they actually pay for the ad. If the guarantee
mm-hmm.
of an audience size is not met, they get a rebate on their advertising costs. And I think that they're going the way of a lot of other award shows and a lot of other special events like Miss America that just didn't keep up with the time. And the audience is drifting away, and the audience will continue to drift away. Not only does the audience object to political speeches, they watch for entertainment, not to be told who to vote for, but I think also the movies today just don't have the widespread appeal that they used to.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can remember, I don't know, I'm not as knowledgeable of the movie industry as you are, but I can remember a time when the Oscars on a Sunday night were pretty big. I mean, in terms of audiences, lots of people wanted to watch what was going to happen. I mean, there was a lot of expectation. I mean, I could care less. I'm not watching it tonight. In fact, I'd rather do a show with you, Bill, than watch
yes,
it.
Yes, absolutely. Well, at one time, people watched to see their favorite stars. You know, who won was really almost a secondary question, but you saw your favorite stars, and there was a time when there really were movie stars. I mean, today a person appears in a movie and walks across the screen for 2 seconds, and they get starring in, you know, star credit. I mean, the number of real movie stars today who can open a movie with automatically big numbers or who could walk down the street and be instantly recognized by more than one generation, very, very small number. I mean, I grew up in the age when MGM had 50 stars under contract, and you saw them all the time. They'd make 3 or 4 movies a year when everybody knew who Gary Cooper was, who Humphrey Bogart was, who Clark Gable was, whose grandson died this week, who, you know, on the female side, everyone knew who Elizabeth Taylor was, Audrey Hepburn, Gene Kelly we mentioned, Fred Astaire. Sid Charisse, these were household names and household pictures, and they're not anymore. They really are not.
No, No, and they were the kinds of people that, as you say, drew an audience.
Yes.
Because they wanted to see, you know, a particular star in a movie. And at the time, of course, the only way to see those movies was to go to the movie house. Now you have other options. But back then, I agree with you. I don't even know what movie. I mean, everybody's talking about a movie called Roma. That's the movie that is going to make it tonight. And look, it maybe it's a great movie. I'm not knocking the movie, but I haven't seen it. And I have not really seen any of the movies that are going to be nominated tonight. So, I mean, who cares who wins as far as I'm concerned? And I also think they keep making the mistake. We talked about it last year, I think, when the Oscars came up. I mean, look, when you write off, or you insult, I should say, 62, 63 million people
that's right.
who voted for President Trump, that's a lot of consumers. That's a lot of people who buy a lot of things that are going to be watching something else tonight, Bill.
That's right. And the tone of the insults, I mean, if you want to make a joke about the president, Bob Hope used to make jokes about the president, but they were made in good fun. But when you insult the voters, that's not a good idea. It's also not a good way to get votes. And we've just gone through this incident in Chicago, which I alluded to
yes.
a few minutes ago, where a number of movie stars made foolish statements prejudging the case. This is America in 2019, a racist society where a movie actor cannot walk down a street in Chicago in 10-degree temperature without being mugged by
right.
two Trump supporters. I mean, it's just so over the top. And I think many of these performers today, if you take, for example, the late-night host, I don't even watch those shows anymore. And I worked on one. I worked on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. And that was a show that appealed to all America. It didn't matter how old you were. It didn't matter what generation you were a member of. I don't think anybody in the audience ever knew whether Johnny was a Democrat or a Republican. And it was pure, and they knew what their job was. It was to entertain. And that,
right.
I'm sorry, but it's not the same way today.
No, and I remember Johnny Carson would crack jokes about, you know, politicians, but they were the kinds of jokes that, I mean, made you laugh, and they were not mean jokes. I mean, you didn't say, gee, Johnny, why are you saying that about my favorite? I mean, they were nice jokes that make you laugh. He used to make jokes about President Nixon that
yeah.
made me laugh a lot because, I mean, there
yes.
were some characteristics to the way President Nixon spoke or President Carter, the way he spoke. But they were the jokes were not ugly, Bill. Nobody was insulted by those jokes.
Right.
I certainly wasn't. But that's not the case anymore if you watch these late-night shows. Before we get to Vietnam and President Trump, I just wanted to say this is the 51st anniversary, 1968. Of the Tet Offensive, which probably changed public opinion back here in the country about the war, but it was so misreported. Had the public been told that we won, maybe it would have been different the way the war turned out, Bill.
Well, that's true, and it was one of the most misreported stories. We were told that the enemy had made a breakthrough and had entered South Vietnamese cities, which was true. But it was like the Battle of the Bulge at the end of World War II. The Germans made a breakthrough and forced us back for a while. But in World War II, the reporters had enough maturity to understand what this was about and that this was a temporary setback in the course of an overall victory. And in the Vietnamese War, we were told the opposite, that this shows how strong the enemy is. It shows how weak our strategy is. How did this happen? Well, it turned out that it was a massacre, but it was a massacre of the enemy troops. They lost some ghastly number of soldiers compared to the number lost by our side, and many of those casualties on our side, and every casualty is precious, but every one of those casualties, almost everyone, was suffered by the Vietnamese, our Vietnamese allies, not by the United States. And Walter Cronkite rushed to Vietnam in the now famous Cronkite Report from Vietnam, in which he basically said, we can't win this. It is the only negotiated solution will end the war. Well, it's interesting that the North Vietnamese, after the war, wrote their own official history, and they said exactly the opposite. They said we were defeated. They made it very plain. Now, here's a situation where the enemy admits to being defeated, and our own journalists come out
right.
with reports saying we can't possibly win.
Yes. Something went very, very wrong. It really did.
Well, and it's, you know, it's most unfair to the young men who put up quite a fight. And that's
yes.
the what has always bothered me about the way that Vietnam War was covered is that the soldiers who won that war, and they did win the war, somehow had to come back home, and here they lost. And they're sitting there, wait a minute, we won this thing, and you're telling me that we lost. But anyway, let's jump to Vietnam today, because it's just for many of us who grew up in that time frame, the idea of the President of the United States going to Vietnam to talk to the leader of North Korea, I mean, 20 years ago, that would have sounded almost impossible, Bill. 10 years ago, maybe 5 years ago. But that's what's going to happen. President Trump will be in Vietnam to talk to the leader of North Korea. And are you expecting much, Bill? I mean, what are your thoughts?
I don't know what to expect. The president did exaggerate the impact of the last summit when he said the North Korean nuclear threat is over. That was not true. It was one of those foolish moments in which he periodically engages. I think the rhetoric this time is a lot more controlled. It is true that as a result of President Trump's efforts, that the North Koreans have not tested nuclear weapons or rocket weapons for quite a time. That's a great accomplishment. I think clearly the next stage has got to be some real nuclear disarmament by the North. I don't know if he will get that at this meeting. The Secretary of State was on this morning saying we have patience. He has to have patience in a situation like this. Great job, Mike Pompeo. He really is doing a very fine job. But I don't know what to expect. I would love to think there will be a surprise and in which the North Vietnamese not only promise to remove a certain number of missiles and a certain number of warheads, but will permit international inspection. That would be the best we could hope for, and I'd love to see it.
Well, what somebody was saying today, some Korean expert was saying that may very well be where we end up, but it's, you know, that this guy in North Vietnam has his own political corners that he has to turn. So he cannot go right away and do it, you know, but eventually he wants to do it because I don't understand what he's gaining out of this nuclear North Korea other than, you know, nobody can attack him because he's nuclear power, but his country is starving to death.
Oh, yeah.
He has no business. Nobody's investing in his country other than the Chinese, who I guess use his mineral resources and his people. But I mean, he's sitting there with all the potential in the world, but he's got nuclear weapons, and that's why nobody will work with him, Bill. So maybe this young man in North Korea has figured it out that if I, you know, I could stay in power, my family can stay in power, but let me give my country some prosperity, Bill.
Of course, it's in his own interest.
Now
it is possible also that Kim could fear being overthrown by his military.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what the circumstances are there, but it is possible that they have warned him about making too many concessions to the Americans. So we'll just have to wait and see. Now, one side story here that's very, very interesting and I think important in an outrageous way is that as these delicate talks are going on this week, one of the House committees run by the Democrats will be holding hearings featuring President Trump's lawyer, Michael Cohen, in an obvious attempt to undercut the president and disparage him while he is abroad negotiating on behalf of the United States. This is almost unheard of. That is something that you just do not do. You don't undercut the president when he is abroad, when he is negotiating with a foreign power. You wait until that's over to hold your hearings. But this is something that reflects the new Democratic Party, and it reflects the new ugliness of American politics. And I wish some adult had sat down with the committee members on the Democratic side and say, look, don't do this. Don't do this. It looks terrible for us. And yet they probably are figuring, well, if we do it, we're going to be the lead story, not the negotiations, because the press basically is in the tank for the Democratic Party. And I don't know if that's going to be true. I think maybe there'll be I'm hoping there will be some members of the press who say, look, this is a setup, holding these hearings the same day. I don't want to go along with the setup. There may be a few courageous people left.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you. I think it's very bad timing. But I also think the Democrats have to be careful, Bill, in what they're doing, because look, it appears that Mr. Mueller is not going to be dropping any bombs. Exactly what Mr. Cohen knows, I don't know. But, you know, I sometimes get the feeling the Democrats are turning into the kid who kept crying wolf.
That's right.
And a lot of Americans are saying, okay, what do you have? Let us know what you have, and let's move on. Because, you know, at some point, I think all these investigations for the sake of investigations, I don't think that's going to work within the party. I mean, we have a couple of times before Bill mentioned that a lot of these Democrats were elected in with very narrow elections and tough districts, and they're going to have to come back in, 20 months and explain why they should be reelected. I don't think investigating Trump for the sake of investigating Trump is going to work real well in their campaigns, Bill. We have a situation here in Texas. I'll send you the news article. We have a situation here in Texas where there is one of these congressmen who was elected, the one who defeated Pete Sessions, who had been in office for a long time. And he's already being targeted by the Texas Republican Party as one of the Democrats they want to, you know, defeat in 2020. And I'm sure it's happening in other districts across the country. So these Democrats are going to get a very tough reelection campaign. And I don't think talking about investigating Trump is their best calling card. You know, they should be talking about something else, Bill.
Well, I think that's absolutely true. They really have no agenda for the American people except one that nobody can afford, you know. You know, it's like driving a Rolls Royce into a political rally and saying to your voters, "You can have this. You can have this once you can afford it, but you can have this." And yes, I think you're absolutely correct that the Democrats are too far out in left field. There are people being targeted. And by the way, let's not forget the Democratic senator from Alabama who won that unusual special election. He's really being targeted. I mean, they feel they can knock him out.
Yes. Well, he's number one on the list. He's the most vulnerable incumbent in 2020 in either party at the moment, Bill. But speaking of the left, let me bring up our friend Bernie Sanders, who's in the race again. He's running for president, and all these videos are coming out of Bernie back in the 1980s. And, I mean, the videos are entertaining, but they really tell you who this man is. I can just imagine if he's the nominee. I can just imagine the Trump campaign taking these videos and just pushing them like crazy, Bill.
Well, yes. It's, you know, you're dealing with a situation that is really so strange. A person who fell asleep in 1961, for example, and woke up this year, you know, in a long self-induced sleep, would not recognize American politics. I mean, they have people running around the presidential level of American politics today who in 1960 would be considered a state Senate level or early congressional level. I mean, it is just remarkable to look at the Democratic race. They're adding one candidate every week. I mean, soon there are going to be more people running for president than there are voters, and that may very well happen in the Democratic Party. And the level of the discussion is so incredibly low.
Right, and what's interesting to me is that if you look at the early polling, and I don't know how valuable that is, but it is what it is, Vice President Biden is the one who's leading with about 25% of the vote, and then comes Bernie Sanders. And then there's Kamala Harris, and then there's a bunch of them with less than, you know, 5 or 6% or whatever, including our own Beto O'Rourke. So I mean, I don't know. I think eventually they're going to have to talk about some, they're going to have to get serious and talk about some topics that appeal to people, because all of this stuff about green energy and all this kind of stuff and, you know, free healthcare and all of this, I just don't think that's going to work, Bill. People are too smart to fall for that. I just think, that, you know, hopefully these debates that they have, hopefully the press will force them to answer some of these questions about how you're going to pay for this. Don't tell me you don't care because somebody's going to have to pay for it, and either tax increases or whatever, but somebody has to pay. Hopefully the media will ask them those questions, Bill.
I hope so. I mean, look. The pattern right now in the polls, and you just went through it, is that these are polls really today about name recognition. And, you know, Biden is way up there because of name recognition. As the candidates become better and better known and take some of these extreme positions, as you say, I hope people start asking questions and detailed questions, not a question every 2 weeks, but saying specifically, what is it you want to do? How are you going to pay for it? And who does it really benefit? And I think, as you do, that the Democratic Party is going way out on a limb in simply making these rash proposals while spending most of their time attacking President Trump and leaving, really, the way a football team would leave an opening in the center, an opening right down the center for a real policy person to come in, or for President Trump to be reelected with 49 states. You know, this could easily be a repeat. This could easily be a repeat of the 1984 presidential election between President Ronald Reagan and Walter Mondale, where
between Nixon and McGovern, back in 72. But it's interesting because some of the names that nobody is talking about. If I was Vice President Biden, and I still think he's going to be the nominee. That's my prediction. I think he's going to be the nominee for, it's early to predict, but that's how I see it right now. But if I'm Vice President Biden, the last person in the world that I would pick for vice president would be any of the names that we're talking about. I'd rather go down to Louisiana where they have a good Democrat governor, a more conservative Democrat governor. I would even pick Doug Jones in Alabama. Simply force the party to the center. Because to me that's the only way they're going to win. They simply, if you put Kamala Harris against Vice President Pence in a debate, I think Pence will destroy her so quickly, Bill.
Yes, well, that's absolutely true. And, remember that Kamala Harris has had a number of gaffes. She is, again, an attractive person who, by the way, never mentions her husband. Have you ever noticed that? Usually candidates run, they mention their family, they talk about their husbands, how happy I am with my wonderful friend and life partner. She never mentions him. It's as if he doesn't exist. And I'd like to know. I just as we said, we want to know more about Alexandria's family. I want to know more about her family. Her father denounced her last week. It was Stanford professor. And nobody asks any questions. Senator Harris, do you have a good relationship with your father? Have you met him? They just don't ask any questions, especially if you're on the left. But she, remember, is the senator, one of the two senators who recently at a congressional hearing for the nomination that was being held to examine the nomination of a judge, asked about the judge's religious beliefs.
Right.
And about his membership in the Knights of Columbus. This is going to come back to haunt her. She has a tendency to engage in these gaffes and to say things like that. You mentioned that she's not quick on her feet. I think you're probably right that if Biden gets the nomination, he would probably be better off. Look, he's not going to choose another white male. He can't do because then you would have in the party people with guns.
Leave the party then.
Yeah, but there are responsible women in the party. There are responsible African Americans in the party, but I don't know if the party itself would allow him to do that. I'm not even sure the party will allow him to choose the vice presidential nominee. They don't have to. Remember, it's only a nomination. Right. They can go out and nominate their own person, and wouldn't that be a sight?
That's going to be quite a convention, to say the least. A couple of other quick stories, Bill, that I wanted to get into because our time is flying. I thought it was great, Bill, that Senator Feinstein really answered back to those young people who showed up at her office. Look, I think it's great that young people get involved in politics, but that the left keeps doing that. They get young people and they use them as props for their whatever policy they're promoting. Now it's green energy. And they show up at Senator Feinstein's office, and I thought she did a great job, almost like the grandmother who said, hey, I don't want you to lecture me. I'm a little older than you. And I thought that was great, Bill. I really thought that was good.
Yes, I did too. I think she's a very frustrated person, Senator Feinstein. She's one of the grown-ups in the Democratic Party.
Yes.
Although in recent years,
right.
she's gotten a little too grown-up. She's very old, and
mm-hmm.
she hasn't been as effective. She mishandled the Judge Kavanaugh thing quite
yes.
considerably. But I think that many of the people in the party are very, very frustrated. We had a congresswoman here in New York who said when the Amazon deal was destroyed by Alexandria and her friends, she said, are we now going up against jobs? I
mm-hmm.
mean, they, some of them are quite open about their discontent at what the party is becoming. And
right.
I think they see somebody like Kamala Harris, who just got to Washington. For goodness
yes.
sake, she's a freshman senator. She's running for president already. She has never actually accomplished much. She is now apologizing for being a prosecutor, for being the state attorney
amazing.
General of California. I mean, I've never seen that in politics before, where you apologize for holding the job because she had to put people in prison. Now, you know, you put that on a national level, it's going to be very, very destructive. Now, usually
absolutely.
They say the purpose of a vice presidential candidate on a national ticket is not to lose votes. And she could lose votes.
Well, she's not going to win. Her problem, Bill, is she's not going to bring anything that Biden maybe we can get into more next week. But I don't think she brings him anything that he doesn't already have. And I always thought
yeah.
that the job of a vice president was to bring something that you don't have. And I don't see anything that she – I mean, he's already going to win California. He's already going to win Illinois. He's going to win everything that Hillary Clinton won. So what does she bring him? And that's why I'm not sure she's the best choice, but I'm sure we can get into that on a future show. But I do want to quickly get into a couple of stories from Urgent Agenda about colleges and political correctness. One was the ski lessons, and the other one is I guess people now find that cowboy hats are racist. That's the latest symbol of racism, the cowboy hat, Bill.
This is a very serious story. Our country is in danger from cowboy hats. Apparently, some people at Wake Forest University objected to the fact that a man walked across campus in a cowboy outfit. It was investigated immediately. The major figures came in. Sherlock Holmes flew in from England, actually, to participate in the investigation. And they found out it was some guy in a cowboy uniform, but that he did not understand how insensitive it was. And there's now talk about banning cowboy outfits at Wake Forest. But this is going on every day, though. I mean, this is
right.
They're now trying. Each group is now trying to outdistance the other in making demands, and demands now for reparations. For slavery,
yes.
which have now become, by the way, a mainstream issue. And
mm-hmm.
again, Kamala Harris, all in favor of it. She doesn't know the resentments this will cause. But the university is still the place that we look to for the most humor every day because they are the leaders in the kind of political correctness that is destroying the Democratic Party.
Absolutely. And it's also creating a lot of tension, I would think, within the university because a lot of young men like to wear cowboy hats. I mean,
yes,
we do that here
right.
in Texas a lot. So the idea that now your cowboy hat is all of a sudden a political statement, I just think that that's destructive. Well, looking at next week, Bill, obviously the president will be in Vietnam. I think he's already on his way to Vietnam, I believe.
Yeah.
And he's going to be sitting down with the head of North Korea. That's going to be a big story. Anything else that you're going to be looking at next week, Bill?
Well, the following, yes, the trip to Korea is to Vietnam is by far the most important, but the congressional hearings with Michael
yes.
Cohen and all the Mueller activity. Remember, it has been predicted by CNN that the Mueller report would be released this week. Now it's been announced it will not be released this week.
Mm-hmm.
I assume that is because of the negotiation that Mueller had enough good sense not to release the report while the president was negotiating. The constant buildup within the, and we've been talking about this tonight, within the Democratic Party, they have a presidential race that is already a rip-roaring race. And this is
mm-hmm.
now a year and how many months? 9, 10 months before the election. And this is going to develop, and it could develop in very strange ways. And remember, there are two people waiting in the wings. One is the former mayor of New York, Mike Bloomberg,
mm-hmm.
and the other is Howard Schultz, two
yes.
businessmen. And don't underestimate their importance, because in 19, 92, Ross Perot got 20% of the vote, and they could, their presence could easily change the outcome of the election. Bloomberg foolishly wants to run as a Democrat, where he has absolutely no support. But if he ran as an independent, he might get more support. Schultz, these guys have not yet formally entered, and Schultz wants to run as an independent. Very interesting developments. On the Republican side, I would watch very closely the president's poll ratings, because somebody made the point that as they rise, it makes it more and more unlikely that there will be a primary challenger to the president next year. And they are rising. They are rising.
That's
the,
right.
The president has gone up, and he has gone up especially among Hispanic voters and even among some black voters.
That's right. Well, Bill, I think that the nightmare scenario for people like Little Evita in the Bronx and some of the left of the Democrat Party would be if there are four people standing on the stage in 2020, President Trump, Vice President Biden, Howard Schultz, and the fellow Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg.
Yes.
And those four are standing on stage. They're all, of course, white men.
That would be, I mean,
you're talking about a total dramatic panic. There'd be panic in the Democrat Party if that's what all of this has led them to, Bill.
Well, absolutely, and that is a possible scenario. Look, it's impossible to predict the future. You know, I've always said that it's all speculation. We don't know what's going to happen by next year. We don't know who will be alive next year.
Nature
takes its course. We don't know if there'll be a Supreme Court opening that could absolutely divide the country.
You think
you saw a fight over Kavanaugh. Should Ruth Ginsburg not live longer, and I hope she does live longer, But if she doesn't live longer, you're going to see the next day a battle unprecedented in Supreme Court history.
Oh,
because
yes, that's going to be.
She's an iconic figure. She's an iconic figure. And the Democrats may try to pack the court the way Roosevelt did in 1938. We need 10 new justices, each one from a different group. I would certainly look at the president's approval ratings and where they're going, because by September, we are going to be in the active campaign. You know, once
that's right.
This
that's
summer
exactly
ends,
right. And by the way, I don't think that. I'm sorry. Go ahead. You were going to say.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say. If I was President Trump, I wouldn't be real worried about Governor Bill Weld challenging him in the primary.
I
saw this headline the other day, Bill, that says Republican ready to challenge President Trump. And I said, oh, my God, is Kasich jumping in?
Yes.
But it turned out to be Bill Weld. I really don't think that's something that he has to worry about. But, Bill, I'm going to let you get back to the Oscars, because I know you've got a checklist and you're following it with great passion.
Oh, yes.
And I will read at Urgent Agenda tomorrow morning your report about the Oscars.
I'm sure it'll be as exciting as can be. It'll be as exciting as Bill Weld.
That's exactly right. As exciting as Bill Weld. Well, I hope your favorite movie wins, whatever that is.
Gone with the Wind.
My favorite movie is probably going to be the black and white movie I see at 9 o'clock tonight, Bill.
That's exactly right. Exactly right.
And the retro channel.
We all feel the same way.
Yes. Well, thank you as always. Thank you for your time, and thank you for Urgent Agenda. And I look forward to our next chat.
I look forward to it too, Sylvia.
Thank you so much. Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We always chat on Sundays and have a great time with our friend Bill Katz. Well, a lot of things we'll probably be talking about next week. I think the president's trip to Vietnam to talk to – that still sounds interesting. The president traveling to Vietnam to talk to the leader of North Korea. That just is something interesting about that. But that will probably be the big story next week when we chat with Bill. Venezuela could be a big story next week as well. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.